What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast number 196, Athletic Training on Demand. Does it help or hurt our profession? This week we are talking with Alicia Pennington out in Southern California. She is the owner of the AT Vantage. So it's a company that looks to get contracts from schools or athletic training, people who need athletic trainers, and then gets athletic trainers to fill those spots. So we're gonna hear more from her in just a minute. I'm your host, Jeremy Jackson. Sitting right beside me, we've got
Cooper,
Joshua,
Juanita,
Nicholas,
Tiana,
and we got all the other students doing the other jobs using hashtag TheSMB. You can interact with us on Twitter because Mariana is right there watching Twitter like a hawk. SportsMedicineBroadcast.com. Right there on the home page, there is the live stream. So that's where my wife usually will watch because she's not logged in looking for credit. But Juanita, who do we have logged in with us watching live?
We have Jackie Gonzalez, Mikey Brown, Matt
Babisek.
Yeah, sorry. Rachel, Catherine Marr, Jason, Peter O'Fallon, Natalie Coronado, Britt Joe, and Marty Castillo.
All right, so we got lots of people logged in to hear from you. Alicia, are you excited?
Definitely.
All right, so if you want to look later, once the podcast actually gets posted, then you can go to sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/ATVantage. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/ATVantage. And then you can also, while you're there, find the link for schoolhealth.com/SMB where you get that giveaway. And who was it last week? There were Danielle Smith from Hawaii won last month. So she got the school health gift card mailed out to her. So again, schoolhealth.com/SMB. And without much further ado, we're going to get right to Alicia, and we're starting with Tiana.
Alicia, can you give us your athletic training story?
Sure. First of all, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. So a little bit about athletic training for me. I never knew about athletic training in high school. My school didn't have an athletic trainer, and there was no such thing as sports medicine classes or anything like that. So I decided to go to Florida State for my undergrad. And though being from California, I wanted to go somewhere else and kind of do something different. So went to Florida State, found athletic training there, finished there, and then continued on to do a graduate assistantship and my master's at Cal State Fullerton in Southern California. And after I graduated with my master's in 2011 is kind of when I started this company. It started as something very different than it is today, but I still do a lot of field work. I'm not just a business owner. I do contract work with USA Beach Volleyball and USA Water Polo, and I'm also an athletic trainer for the television show The Biggest Loser.
You're an athletic trainer for The Biggest Loser?
Yes, sir.
Very interesting. I think I saw an application go out for that last 2 years or so. I was like, man, that'd be interesting. It's a very unique setting. So
interesting is right. We could have a whole separate podcast on just that.
maybe we will. All right, mark that down there, Cooper. Got that? All right. So did you have a full-time job after you graduated as an athletic trainer?
I did. So not immediately. When I graduated with my master's, we were still sort of in the recession. That was 2011. There wasn't a whole lot of full-time jobs available. And the ones that were available, I just didn't feel like were a good fit for me. So I did contract work solely for about a year. And then after that, I accepted a full-time position at a high school, and I worked there for 2 years.
Sorry about that. Step away for 1 second. Okay. All right. Well, then let's move more on towards the topic.
Can you tell us a little bit about AT Vantage?
Yeah, I'll kind of give you an origin story and kind of where this all came from. So when I finished my master's and was going into the workforce, I was looking for full-time work. It was around May, and most work wouldn't start until the fall. But I kind of needed to start making money right away. So I was looking for kind of like the equivalent of a substitute teacher platform, but for athletic trainers, somewhere that I could put my name in there, and whenever work became available, I would be contacted. But in my search, I didn't find anything like that that existed. So I kind of just started telling all of my colleagues in the Southern California area, hey, I'm willing to pick up contract work. You know, I'm looking for odd and end jobs to get me through until I land a full-time position. If you hear of anything, can you pass it on to me? So that was effective for a little while. But then it got to a point where my schedule was filling up, but people were still asking and looking for an athletic trainer. So I thought, well, there's got to be other people out there like me that are looking for work. So what if I just throw up a website? And it was sort of like a Craigslist idea at first. And I just, again, told all my friends, hey, if you're looking for work, just go to this website. We're going to post all of it there. And also, if you know people, you know, like organizations that are looking for athletic trainers, let me know. And I'll throw it up on this website. So we started out as the ATC agency, and that was our website. And it was very straightforward. You kind of just click on a job and it has the details and you contact that person. There was no really like middleman, which is kind of where we're at today. But really what changed that model was the hunger of some athletic trainers to work more than others. So what started happening was somebody would say, sure, I'll work for $25 an hour. And then somebody else would say, well, I'm willing to work for $22.50, and the next person 20, and so on and so forth. So of course, all of this was going on in the background, and I didn't see any of it occurring, you know, on the website, but I started getting complaints that people were doing this and they were asking for some people to be kind of barred from being allowed on the website. And so it created all these complications. And so kind of as a result of that, we had to essentially lock down the website. So everybody getting in needed to have a login. And then at that point we started requiring credentials and proof of insurance and CPR and things like that. We figured, you know, if we're going to be a little bit more legit, then, you know, let's do it the right way. And then with that, we would make clients contact us directly. We would negotiate a good salary on behalf of the athletic trainer, because some of these clients were posting up jobs for $15 an hour and that kind of ridiculousness. So that's where we kind of stepped in and became the middleman. And then it's just kind of snowballed from there. At that point, we started to have school districts contact us. And then we started getting into more of those 10-month type of contract agreements. And then most recently, we've gone back more to the weekend and tournament stuff in addition to the school district. So in general, we're a contracting company, and our goal really is to match the clients and the athletic trainers that are looking for work and making it a respectful and a supportive environment for an athletic trainer to work in.
All right, Juanita, can you show that? Let me read it. Click the little eyeball on that comment. All right, so John, I still don't know how to say your last name. You're going to have to type in there phonetically how to say it. I'm going to say Seiko. His initial question is about liability and where does that fall. So that's one of the things you mentioned, is that you were requiring them to have their own personal liability insurance and to submit their credentials and CPR stuff. So talk a little bit about the liability aspect and why that's important there.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm a proponent of all athletic trainers, regardless of how you're employed, to be carrying personal professional liability insurance. A lot of times, if you're in a position where you're employed in a full-time status, like at a school or something, that employer will pick up the cost of that for you. But if you think about it, every single healthcare provider has some type of professional liability that protects them in the case of any type of suit that may come against you. So when we were when we knew that we were going to be exploring this more on an independent contractor status as opposed to a W-2 employee, we felt really strongly about athletic trainers having that protection for themselves. And truly, it's less about us as the company, because our insurance policy is totally separate and different than the insurance policy that the athletic trainers carry. And so at first it took a little bit of education to get the athletic trainers to understand that this isn't a CYA for me and my company. This is me trying to protect you and to help you to understand that if you're covering a tournament and, you know, somebody gets a concussion or that there's a groin strain and you're doing a hip spica and, you know, they want to come back and say that you touched them the wrong way, or they want to say that a concussion.
All right. We have lost Alicia for a second. Hello.
Did I lose you there?
Yeah, you said that you were saying. Oh. Are you still there?
I think so.
All right. So your video is just showing the image. So it may just be a bandwidth issue. So if it drops out again, we can go without the video, I guess. But
okay. Yeah. So the liability aspect of it, we required the athletic trainers to carry a professional liability insurance policy, which we mostly recommend HPSO because they're the most affordable. It's less than $200 a year, and that would give you a $1 million, $3 million, $1 million per incident, $3 million aggregate in protection. And it also has the molestation clause, which, you know, as much as we don't like to talk about it, it's a very real thing, especially back in 2011, 2012. A lot of school districts were looking for that because of the emergence of, you know, things in the Catholic Church and other issues that came about with people having access to youth and them doing those things. So HPSO does have that molestation clause. And then the liability aspect for the company, we also carry a professional liability, what is called an E&O, errors and omissions. And that basically protects the professional aspect of what we do. And then there's also the general liability, which covers more of just, you know, someone trips and falls and hurts themselves and they want to sue us. That's more of what the general liability covers.
Gotcha. All right. So one of the questions that I tweeted out, and I know Rachel was like, oh yeah, I really want to hear what you have to say about this.
Yeah.
Was that is a contract athletic trainer, which is essentially what you're doing. You're filling the void with a contract athletic trainer. I said, is that good enough? Because I don't know. I work full time in the high school with the kids. I'm here with the kids all the time. They always see me. It's not just at games or not just after school, or it's not somebody else next year or, you know, whatever, next week, that kind of thing. And so is that contract employee serving those kids well enough?
It's a great question. So let me start with most of these districts that have come to us are in a place of financial need. So they're coming to us and saying, we can't afford to employ somebody full time. And my response to them is something is better than nothing. And so 3 years ago with two of our school districts, we started out at 200 hours for a school year. I think that somebody could easily put that in a season. So we knew off the bat that 200 hours wasn't enough. So then the next year we went in and we proposed 500 hours and it was approved. Then the next year we went in and proposed 1,100 hours and it was approved. So my point is that you kind of have to start somewhere. What I see the value in is that these districts know the value of an athletic trainer and they want to have them there, even if it's for, you know, $10,000 a year. And what I go in and do is say, it is not acceptable to pay an athletic trainer $10,000 a year and expect them to work anywhere near full time. I'd say $10,000 a year, you might get 200 hours out of that, because you should be paying an athletic trainer $25 to $30 an hour. So a lot of these positions where you see, oh, it's just a coaching stipend, or, you know, it's just some slush money that we have left over in boosters, and we'll just get an athletic trainer with that. That's where I step in and say, absolutely not. We're thankful that you have $10,000 to throw at this, but this is what $10,000 will buy you, because we're not going to compromise what the athletic trainer gets paid because you have strict funding. So no, I don't think that one full-time person, I don't think that two full-time people, maybe even three full-time people at a huge high school, whatever, will be enough, especially when you start to look at return to learn programs and, you know, the way that our understanding of injuries is coming along. It's like you need someone there before school, during school, after school. And so No, what we are doing isn't the end all be all by any means, but it's a start. And we have athletic trainers in 18 high schools that have never had athletic trainers before. So we're going in a direction where we're introducing these services, and the athletes, the coaches, the parents, the overall community are starting to understand what it is to have a healthcare professional to treat their athletes on an everyday basis.
Alicia, what do you see as some potential drawbacks for hiring athletic trainers this way?
Well, the biggest thing is the competition that we face. When we first started doing this, because the economy wasn't where it is now, it was easier to recruit athletic trainers to accept the positions that we offer. Now we are competing against full-time with benefits, with 401k. We're competing against those kinds of positions. And I think that with the education that we're given about the work that we should be doing when we get out of school, most people are attracted to those types of positions. So it's our job as a company to market to the right people. A full-time with benefits, not a whole lot of flexibility in the scheduling, that type of position isn't for everybody. There are athletic trainers out there like myself who are not satisfied with that. They want more. Myself specifically, I wanted versatility in what I did every day. I got extremely bored. So the fact that I can, jump on a plane with USA Beach Volleyball or be on a TV show, and it's just here and there a little bit. And we have athletic trainers that do this with us. They're kind of like our subs. The drawback would be that there's other competition and that's what a lot of people look for, but it's not necessarily the fit for everybody.
All right. John had another question, and essentially he was saying, can you rate the athletic trainer? So if he is going to call in a substitute athletic trainer and, go through AT Vantage, is there a way that he can comment on that and saying, man, this person was awesome, I'm gonna give them 5 stars, or this person showed up late, they looked like a slob, they didn't know what to do, they slept, and I give them a 1 star. Is there some way to do that?
Great question. So with the traditional software that we've been utilizing for more of our school district type stuff, we get that information directly from the client via a survey. But we are developing a new website, which is advantageselfserve.com, which will have that feature available. That self-serve platform is more interactive between the client and the athletic trainer, as opposed to us being that middle person. We are trying to control as many variables as possible to make the interaction as easy and as seamless as possible. But there will be a rating feature available in there. And it's, like you just explained, a 1 through 5 star type system.
All right.
And what are the top benefits for working this way?
I'm sorry?
And what are the top benefits for working this way?
So for an athletic trainer to work through kind of the way you're doing.
Well, I think the best thing is that because we have the limitation on hours, because the client understands that there's a certain number of hours that they've been granted for that school year, I don't feel like the athletic trainer is overworked or that they're there unnecessarily. So there was often times when I was working at the high school level where it was like, well, no, we don't really need you here, but if you could just hang out for another hour or two, that would be awesome. And we really cut down on a lot of that. We encourage our clients and our athletic directors to look at their schedule and to determine what is the greatest need. There very rarely is a game or a practice or something that goes uncovered. But, for the athletic trainer to say, hey, basketball season doesn't start for another 3 months. And football just ended at 6:30. Do I really need to be here and cover, off-season basketball conditioning until 8:30 at night? And the athletic director can determine that, if that's where they want to allocate their hours. So I think that's a huge advantage. But the other thing is that they've got tremendous flexibility in their schedule. We don't really manage any of the scheduling. We encourage the athletic trainer to speak with the athletic director and to figure out the schedule amongst themselves, and then they give that to us. And so if an athletic trainer, you know, needs to go out of town for a wedding or has something come up, there's a tremendous amount of flexibility where we can bring in a sub. That school, those athletes, that program doesn't go without coverage, and yet that athletic trainer is still able to take their time off that's needed. And the other thing is that with being an independent contractor, you have a lot more control over the financial aspect of it. So for those who are unaware, being an independent contractor essentially means that you get paid the full amount. There's no taxes taken out on the front end of it. So if we say that we're paying you $25 an hour, you will actually receive a paycheck that is in that $25 an hour sum. And then, of course, at the end of the year, you're responsible for paying taxes. But as a result of essentially being in business for yourself, there are an enormous amount of write-offs that are available. And we're holding a tax seminar this upcoming weekend for our independent contractors, where we're bringing in two different CPAs to discuss this with them. But things such as the mileage from your house to work, that can be written off. Any clothes or shoes that you had to buy to work, that can be written off. Any meals that you provided yourself while you were working, that can be written off. There's so many things that you end up getting tax benefits for in the end. So while some people may gripe that, oh, you know, I've got to save 20% and I don't budget well, and, you know, I'm not necessarily able to pay my taxes at the end of the year, I would argue to say that you're probably going to end up paying fewer taxes because of all of the write-offs that are available when you are in business for yourself as an independent contractor.
All right. So Cooper's got a question, and then we're going to come back to this really long thing that Rachel typed up. So
how does the lack of title protection in California affect athletic training?
Well, that's a loaded question, but I will answer it in regards to what we do. What I feel is necessary is a little bit further education on the client side of things. So when we are meeting with a potential client, we have to explain to them this idea of, you know, anybody can represent themselves as an athletic trainer, and to teach them about the difference between going through an accredited program, sitting for the BOC, maintaining good standing, all of that kind of stuff. And surprisingly, a lot of the people that I get in front of understand this. And the reason I think that is because if they've made the determination to call an agency that does athletic training contract work, they probably know what an athletic trainer is. And then on our side of it, we just have to do the verification. Though they may upload a BOC card, we still go to the BOC ATC website and verify all credentials. So the only other ways that it would potentially differ is the physician oversight. I know that in some states it's a lot.
We lost you again. Hello.
Sorry about that. I'm not sure what keeps happening.
That's all right. Okay. So I'm not quite sure where you cut off. It was in the middle of discussing the title protection in California, and we're saying y'all individually go check all the BOC stuff and different things like that. So
yeah, and the only other thing I added was that you know, I know in other states there's levels of strictness about what an athletic trainer can do based on orders or prescriptions that they've received from a physician. None of that applies in California, though we do have a physician that oversees everything that we do as a company as a medical advisor.
Okay. All right, and then I'm going to start reading this here. Go ahead, Juanita. There we go. All right, so Rachel was saying, I think it's a double-edged sword with that. I think in AT, going into a school for just football coverage is not enough and can actually fall into Title IX violations. However, for things like tournaments, I think it's a more viable model. Hang on, there's three. There we go. So it also also a double-edged sword in that maybe someone has no athletic trainer coverage, they just don't know our value, and getting an AT in there for any amount of time can show that value, which can lead to more. So I do, as she says, I do a lot of contract work myself, but I've pretty much stopped doing per diem work for random schools who just won't make the commitment to hire an AT outright. I do still cover tournaments, and I've managed to get an ongoing contract with an adult field hockey league. So at least I'm a consistent AT there. Is there still more? All right, still more. Keeping going. So on that point, I recommend people work out supply costs ahead of time too. Are supply costs being reimbursed? Are they provided to them, or is AT providing them? And yes, that's it. All right, so
I can comment on a bunch of that.
Okay,
yeah.
Go ahead.
So I'll start with the Title IX thing. I hear what you say.
All right, lost you again. It was not meant to be.
For example, with Title IX issues, and you know, if they choose to give their football program an athletic trainer, but not their you know, softball program, then that's something that they're probably going to have to deal with. But when a client contacts us about wanting coverage, very rarely am I bringing up the idea of Title IX and things like that. Now, when we go into a school for a full 10-month contract, that's definitely something that's discussed, that there needs to be equal weight and value given to all sports. Most of the time, the only travel that an athletic trainer will do would be with varsity football, and that's more because of the contact aspect of it. But otherwise, we very strongly discourage giving more of the male sports coverage versus female. And to be honest, we really haven't run into an issue with that where there's more weight or more value given to the male sports and the female sports. In terms of the per diem and kind of piecemealing a season together, I agree. With the tournament stuff that we do, you know, it's every weekend and it's, you know, kind of a different event every weekend. But when someone contacts us and says, you know, oh, we need an athletic trainer for practice this weekend, or we need, you know, an athletic trainer to cover a game, most of the time my answer is that's not fair to our athletic trainers or to your athletes. You need to have a consistent face. You need to have somebody that's going to be there on a regular basis. So I'm jogging my memory, but I can't think of a single time that we have even moved forward with anything less than a season long. And mostly for that reason, it just doesn't make sense. The last part of it, of introducing an athletic trainer and at least getting services started, you know, that's our hopes. I tell people all the time, and I'm truly not joking, that if we were to get all of our athletic trainers hired on by the districts as full-time employees, I will be happy. I'll be glad to lose that business. If we can go out of business, that means that every client is served and every athletic trainer is placed. That's the ideal end goal in all of this.
All right. Okay. And then now I'm not sure if I heard you say, so what do y'all do as far as supplies? Again, that's just work it out with.
Oh yeah. Supplies. Sorry. Yes. We do get that worked out with the client ahead of time. So either the client will be responsible for providing the supplies, or if the athletic trainer brings supplies, they will be reimbursed, and we have to reimburse supply for supply. We don't reimburse just money for supplies, or we increase the hourly rate to accommodate for the cost of supplies.
All right. So again, that's all worked out beforehand rather than just assuming that one thing or another.
Yes, absolutely.
So I learned probably as, I don't know, a 17-year-old not to just assume somebody's going to pay you, but to know up front. So y'all are both on the same page because, you know, I working for a friend of my dad's, like, yeah, you know, just come work this event for me this weekend. It was a work in a company picnic, right? So I had to tear down and set up all these booths. Uh-huh. Well, then I never know how much I'm going to get paid. And you know, of course, $200 or $300 for a weekend is really good for a 17, 18-year-old kid.
Sure.
But
yeah.
Thinking back, I really should have made that clear ahead of time. So.
Yeah, and kind of along those same lines, before an athletic trainer ever goes out and works on our behalf, we have signed contracts of what we are paying them, when they will get paid, how they will get paid. So there's no misunderstanding or discrepancy between you know, what's going to happen and then what actually happens. And we put all of that up front. In fact, we require it signed by them and back in our possession before they can even go out on the field.
That is a great, great plan. All right, we have another comment in the chat room. You said it's Jackie. You want to read it, Juanita? No? All right. All right, Jackie says, I know that I worked at a college that has an outreach program to the smaller schools around us, and we basically covered all football games in all varsity tournaments. It has grown over the last few years, but I feel that it is a struggle for these schools to understand the true value of an AT being on campus at all times for them. Thoughts on that?
You know, I think that we all have a responsibility to educate the next person about what it is that we do. And as much as that college probably feels like it's doing a tremendous job by doing that outreach service, and it is, I do think that there is responsibility on their behalf to talk to the administration of those other schools and say, this isn't enough. You know, this is a good starting point, but we're not going to continue to do this if you're not going to increase your responsibility on this as well. And your, you know, dedication to having somebody on a regular basis. So again, while getting an athletic trainer in there on a part-time basis is a great starting point, it's by no means an ending point. And you have to continually be working to increase that coverage, excuse me, and to provide more care if you really, to really be doing a service to that community.
All right. One of the questions on Twitter that Mike Stevenson, he's been on the podcast before. He said he's interested to know the challenges that you face with contract competition from business competitors. So, you know, here in the Houston area, we have hospitals that do a lot, that do pretty much all the contract stuff, you know, Memorial Hermann, Methodist, and Texas Children's. They're pretty much kind of cornering the market for athletic training outreach stuff because that kind of draws them back to the hospital. So talk about the challenges you face there.
Yeah. So in California, there's not a lot of hospitals that are doing it. It's mostly physical therapy clinics or chiropractors. So the biggest challenge is that they are going to be cheaper than we are. And the reason for that is because they're not solely relying on the hours that an athletic trainer works for income. That is the only thing that our company does, is contracts out athletic trainers. So a hospital, I mean, they've got multi-million dollars coming in from insurance reimbursement. Same thing with a physical therapy clinic. They've got the insurance reimbursement to keep their company afloat. So they can contract out athletic trainers at a much cheaper price in the hopes that there will be the referrals to come back. Now, what we've seen happen is that even if a clinic or a hospital can offer a lower price up front, sometimes there is a requirement and a quota that has to be met for referrals to come back. And because that's really, as I've just said, how that company makes money. So the parents of those athletes are then kind of put in a sticky situation, depending on what their insurance policy is, that the athletic trainer is recommending that they go to ABCPT, but ABCPT doesn't take their insurance, or the family doesn't have insurance, depending on, you know, what kind of socioeconomic region you're working in. So, you know, like I said, our biggest challenge is cost, but I'm starting to see more and more clients that are saying, you know what, we'd rather not do business with someone that may have ulterior motives or may have business in all other areas except for this. Because the other thing is that a lot less emphasis is put on that outreach aspect of it, because it's only one department of an entire hospital or of an entire physical therapy clinic. There isn't as much, they don't put as much.
Long distance phone calls, I guess, they're not very consistent. I'm sure she'll be buzzing back in here in a second. So hey, you guys are doing a great job in the chat room. Lots of questions. Keep them coming. In case I didn't mention you earlier, I got Jackie, Mickey, Matt, Rachel, Katmar, Marty, Jason, Peter, Natalia, Britt, and Joe. Thanks for talking live. We're not quite finished yet, but I'm waiting for Alicia to come back on the air. Any of you guys in the chat room, other than Rachel, do contract work? I know Rachel's out in California, and I know she commented earlier up there that she does a lot of contract work. She hasn't had the full-time thing in California. I know Jackie's down here in the Valley. And I see Callie Utsi just joined in the chat room. Callie, welcome. Thanks for joining us. Alicia, our guest, is having some issues with Skype, so we're going to give her just a few more minutes to jump back on.
Did you have any other questions or did you finish up?
Yeah, Rachel was saying she can attest to the quota thing, but you know, being referred back to a PT clinic, that kind of thing. But Kat Marr here at Klein Collins High School was wondering, how do you encourage schools to hire full-time athletic trainers? And is that a conflict for your business? I mean, I know earlier you said the end goal would be for you to be out of this business and every school would have athletic trainers. So what are your thoughts there? How do you encourage them?
Yeah, great question. To be honest, it requires very little encouragement. As soon as they get that athletic trainer on campus, they recognize the value and they want more of it. So like I said, when we started at 200 hours and then got to 500 into 1100, it's because the coaches were asking for more. The ADs were asking for more. The principals were asking for more. You know, we speak for ourselves. Really, honestly, it takes very little work on my behalf to say, you know, maybe we should increase the hours on this. Most of the time, it's the client coming back to us saying, we could really use more hours. Can you propose for more and see if the district will approve it? And to be honest, you know, the district is in business for the students. So if there is a precedent being set from all levels, parents, coaches, athletic directors, administrators, the district is going to respond to that in a positive way. And that's why we've been successful in continually increasing the hours. And is it a conflict of interest? Absolutely it is. But I am not, the reason I started this business is because I saw a need. And I am very passionate about athletic training and bettering our profession. So if it puts my company out of business, and the prosperous part of it is that all of these schools have athletic trainers and these athletic trainers have work, then I'll find something else to do. It's I and what I am doing is not bigger than the profession and not bigger than a bunch of athletic trainers being able to provide for themselves, provide for their family, and for all of these high schools to have a full-time athletic trainer. I'll find something else to do.
All right. So we got lots of people typing in there, written, ready to get their comments. And I had a great question for you, but I was listening. That happens sometimes when you're actually listening, right? So every time I do an interview, I'm reminded of Fight Club. I think it's Fight Club, where it says most people don't really listen. They're just waiting for their turn to speak.
Yep.
And so I have to listen, but then I have to think of these questions and write them down. But
speaking of conflict of interest in your brain.
All right. Let me see. Kat Marr, she said, wonderful attitude. I know that California doesn't have a wonderful licensure practicing act. What is your role in the state of California in strengthening the practicing act?
Great question. What CATA mostly encourages us to do is to contact our local legislation, which we are in contact with. There's a specific district that we belong to. And so whenever there's letter writing campaigns and things along those lines, we're in contact with our assemblymen. The other thing that we do is when National Athletic Training Month comes around, we go and get proclamations from all of the cities that we do business in. So Anaheim, Garden Grove, Covina, Baldwin Park, we'll be getting them. We've been in Anaheim for several years. We were in Covina Valley for several years. This is our first year in both Baldwin Park and Garden Grove. So what we do is we contact the mayor of those cities and we ask for a proclamation of National Athletic Training Month. And as a result of receiving that proclamation, you have the opportunity to address the board of directors for that city council. and they give you about 2 minutes. So when I am in front of them, I speak to them about, you know, whatever assembly bill that we have being trying to get pushed through at that point, and just educate them about what an athletic trainer is and why this should be in support of a licensure act for us.
All right. So I remember what my question was, and then Jackie actually just happened to ask the same question. So
cool.
What records are kept to help justify more hours for your contract employees? And so her question, essentially, she's the only athletic trainer on the campus, sometimes having three sites at one time with two of them being uncovered.
Yeah.
What can she do to help keep? And so what Bill and I have done here is we keep a record of our hours on Google Docs so that, you know, I can do it from my phone or he can do it wherever so we can share that. And we just keep track of how long we're doing. Also, we use Rank One to record injuries. Yep. And we're trying to be better about recording every time somebody comes in, but it just doesn't happen. So there's a lot of stuff we miss. You know, we don't write down a Band-Aid every time somebody comes in. We just don't. But if they come in for any sort of treatment, we try to keep that. And then being professional, you know, I encourage, you know, myself and then my students and Bill, I try to get us to dress, you know, wearing khaki pants, polos, that kind of thing, so that we represent ourselves well. There's a positive impression. And then once you take it away from there.
Yeah. So very, very similar structure. We track all hours worked by every athletic trainer. So we have that record. And we also have an injury management database, which is InjureFree, who we've partnered with. So athletic trainers are able to manage both injury reports, but also treatment tracking. But the other thing I would recommend are the resources available on NATA. They have a secondary school valuation model where it asks a number of different questions about how much you have to travel or how many athletes each sport has and, you know, numerical things along those lines. And then it spits out a number at the end. And it essentially that number is what their recommendation is on how many athletic trainers should be available based on the needs. So that secondary school evaluation model is really a good resource. But then also, if you go to the Safe School Sport Award, there's a checklist that you have to go through. There's the immediate checklist, I think, is like somewhere right around or under 10 questions. And based on how you can answer that, it sends you to the next screen. If you can get to the next screen, there's actually a PDF that you can download that shows checkbox by checkbox what would be required to get a Safe School Sport Award. And some of those things are, you know, like a locked filing cabinet, an AED, a school team that works on any of the injuries. So what I would say is that even if you aren't able to tackle that issue of another athletic trainer, try to see what other areas that you can improve your position in, because sometimes it's funding and sometimes, you know, they'll give you the runaround about other stuff, but having those different documents that you can show, you know, this is what I do, you know, developing EAPs and concussion protocols and being a part of that return to learn conversation. And, you know, like what Jeremy's saying with having that professional presence on campus, interjecting yourself in those conversations goes a long way for seeing the value in what you do, as opposed to just that person that shows up at lunchtime and is here after school.
All right. Lots and lots of great comments there. Anything you feel like we've missed so far? Alicia, I know there's still some more people typing, so I'll wait and see what they say there.
I feel like we've done a pretty good job of, you know, most of the questions that I saw coming in on Twitter before we went live, I think that we've covered.
All right. So while I wait for them to finish, I want to talk about I was just looking back at feedback. You know, everybody wants to hear how they're doing and things like that. And so Melissa Davis was listening to the one where we talked about getting AEDs for your school. And she said, I like what Living for Zachary organization is doing. I wish there were other organizations like that to help schools, especially those in more rural areas. So basically they sponsor AEDs for youth organizations or for schools. And so it's pretty cool. I got to talk to them at SWATA this summer. So
that's interesting. I'm not familiar with their organization. I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, I know they're actually in the Dallas area. And so,
okay.
But they probably have links to other organizations similar to them. You know,
yeah.
So,
You know, what we do to get AEDs on campus is we just bundle it with the hours that we're proposing for the year. And we just sell it as a benefit of renewing a contract with us. So, you know, when you're talking to somebody about signing a 10-month contract for 1,100 hours, to throw a $1,200 to $1,500 AED in there is quite nominal. So that's how we've been able to get AEDs on most of our campuses.
That's a really cool, again, just kind of the whole theme of is you got to start somewhere and then you get a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And so let me see. All right. So Jackie responded to your comment saying, I started at this job in July and I've kept a record of my hours, how many games are going uncovered and how many injuries happen when I'm not there. I also do not have any online records. I'm on paper notes, but my AD is fighting to get rank one. So sounds like she's doing a lot of those things. Just has to.
Yeah. And, you know, at the end of the year, I would just recommend that she asks for a meeting with the principal, whoever's in the decision-making position, and just kind of lay all that information out and do your best not to accuse or point fingers and say things like, you know, you're not allowing enough hours or you're restricting me, but more presenting it as, you know, I see these areas of how we can improve and I would like to have X amount more hours for the next year so that we could get this game covered and this game covered or whatever it is and kind of present it in a way where you're working with them, not against them.
All right. Rachel says, with contract ATs who are covering tournaments, how do you handle injury follow-up, if at all? Say up to the AT, your company, or not at all? And this is actually a really good question because I'll be working a huge volleyball tournament coming up in March, and there'll be, I think there's 7 halls at the George R. Brown, which is a huge convention center. So there'll be hundreds of teams, and these kids come from Dallas, they come from Louisiana, from San Antonio. So, you know, up to 6 hours away. So what do you guys do there?
Yeah, great question. So first part of my answer is the injury reporting document software that we use has a portion at the bottom that allows us to get contact information for parents or coaches or the athlete themselves to allow for follow-up. The actual follow-up occurs with the organization. So right now our major tournament contract is with Southern California Youth Rugby, and it's all interplay. So everybody who plays each other is from that organization. So they have actually employed someone, an athletic trainer, who is responsible on Monday mornings for going through all of the injury reports that were submitted. And
oh no. All right. So she's coming back in. So while Alicia is out, I'm going to go ahead and read some of the other feedback. John Prosek says, in soccer, we deal with these injuries on a daily basis. Enjoyed input from the college and MLS training staffs. So that was talking about when we talked about soccer injuries with Darren Innes from the Houston Dynamo, Bobby Weisenberger from the Charleston Battery, and Don Stuckey from the Rice Owls. Looks like she may be coming back. Alicia, you back?
I'm there.
All right. Skype is not our friend today.
No, definitely not.
All right. But I don't think it's deterred anybody because we still have like 12 viewers. And then I think there's 12 or so viewers that are just viewing the actual live stream. So that's, cool. That is all good. Let me switch the camera over to me since your picture's not up, but that's cool. Maybe we'll just leave it that way. And then it'll be less likely to drop. Maybe. All right. So you were discussing, What's the injury software you guys use again?
It's InjureFree, InjureFree.com.
InjureFree.com. And then you said, I'm assuming that's something you could do on your mobile phone if you're working at tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then the big contract you said was with rugby and somebody actually goes through those injury reports and that's about where you cut off.
Yeah. So they've employed an athletic trainer, for 10, 15 hours a week. And their responsibility on Monday mornings is to go into the injury reports that were submitted and to follow up on anything that occurred over the weekend.
All right. And then Kaylee Yutzi said to follow up with Rachel's question, do you have a model in place that athletes follow up care say, creating appointments, or do you deal with insurance? It says, in Ireland, I know they utilize social media to advertise their location and evaluate sports injury.
I think I know what she's asking. No, we don't have like a standalone kind of on-demand athletic training clinic. If that's what you're asking, I'm not sure if it is. But we do occasionally get contacted by athletes who maybe don't have an athletic trainer at their high school, or are just recommended to us by just colleagues in the area, coaches or other people that we've worked with. And occasionally I will, recommend them to one of the athletic trainers in the area to do an evaluation, and just kind of something for that athletic trainer to make a little bit of extra money. And the athlete usually just pays cash for something like that. That'll be my next business.
There you go. See, good job. You run this one into the ground, or I guess not into the ground, whatever the opposite of that would be.
Yeah.
You solve this problem, so you go solve another one.
Sounds good to me.
All right. And then I know you did a great job of not talking at all about your podcast. and so I know in your podcast you discuss some of these, like the injury software and stuff like that. So why don't you take a minute and just talk about your podcast, talk about the AT Advantage podcast.
Thank you for allowing me to do that. Being a business owner, I don't have any education in business. I'm an athletic trainer through and through. But I really see the need for athletic trainers to understand business topics. A lot of what we have discussed here, from insurance to, negotiating a salary, or to getting your salary increased, or, you know, any of that kind of stuff, that's all very business. They are business techniques. So my podcast focuses on the business in athletic training. And I know that probably the title alone scares a lot of people, because, you know, we don't think that what we do is business, but maintaining inventory and keeping records and conducting ourselves as a professional and negotiating and so many other topics do fall under that business category. So each podcast, we kind of choose a different topic and I break it down. So I guess if you've enjoyed listening to my voice and kind of hearing what I have to say here, then I would say that you'd probably enjoy the podcast. We are the Business Advantage, and Advantage with the AT. You can find us on iTunes. We're also on SoundCloud. We're only about 6 to 7 episodes in. So, if you want to binge on them, you definitely can. We're not so far ahead that you can't catch up.
Yeah, I'm coming up on, this is 196 or 197, so I don't think they can catch up on mine. But I did have somebody email me saying that they were binge listening. I think it was in Illinois, so that was pretty cool.
That is cool.
So I really enjoyed the last one, that the girl with the drum line. That was
interesting.
Totally unique. You hear all the time about athletic training stuff in different places, like working at NASA here in Houston, there's NASA. And that's understandable, working at the airlines, but working with a drum line. And it's like a club drumline, so the kids pay to go there. Anyway, so check out that podcast. Give it a listen, give it a try. It's definitely cool, informative, and then you'll have one to add to your list whenever I don't have one up and running. So, and then also coming up in March, I'm going to be talking with Alicia and then Chris over at AT Podcast. So you're getting 3 athletic training podcasts. We're going to talk about a couple different things about how they're using this to promote the profession, to improve it. And then maybe we'll even give you some hints or tips or clues or whatever you call them for starting your own either blog or podcast or video podcast to, let me switch the camera back over to me. I'm terrible at this. If you want to start this, or, become a regular guest on something like mine or Alicia's, then, give you some our thoughts on what we've done well and what we've done terribly. So be sure to check out Alicia there. Alicia, why don't you give us your contact information again?
Yeah, so you can get me, Alicia, A-L-I-S-H-A, at The Advantage, so T-H-E, ATVANTAGE.com. If any of your questions weren't answered here, I'd be more than happy to answer them privately. I'm also
Mostly active on the business account for all social medias. So we are at The Advantage on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. I'd say if you think that you have a question that other people could benefit from seeing the answer from, tweet it to us or send it to us on Facebook so that more people can, you know, see the answer to that.
All right. And then your, you know, my hashtag is DSMB for people watching the show live. Yours is hashtag QA. And
yeah,
T?
Q and A T. So like Q and A, but we threw a T at the end. So hashtag Q A N D A T.
All right, there we go. So very cool. All right, so Peter just jumped in there and he says, I binge listened to both of your podcasts on the way to and from work. So woohoo! All right, go good job, Peter.
Awesome.
So maybe we'll have to get Peter on the live show and he can just tell us how awesome we are. Sounds pretty cool.
Love it.
All right. So sportshealth.com/SMB. I mentioned, you know, there's been five or six so far that have received a gift card from School Health. So definitely check it out. The January password is GHATS, G-H-A-T-S, Greater Houston Athletic Trainer Society, which Kat Marr is the president of. And we just held a giant workshop. We had 1,300 plus student athletic trainers on a Saturday morning where our kids had to get to the school at 6 so they could ride the bus over to the school that's like an hour away. So on a Saturday where they're off, getting up really early, 1,300 kids, the Greater Houston Athletic Trainer Society is a great organization that promotes athletic training in the Greater Houston area. Very cool. Very proud to be a part of it. And I'm very thankful that they are willing to sponsor the CEUs for listening live. And again, you get the live CEUs for listening, or you get the CEUs for listening to the live portion, because that's how I can see you're logged in. I can track how much time you're here. And then coming up this summer, I'm going to be broadcasting live from Spats, which is in South Padre Island, down in the valley. So several of my live listeners here will hopefully be catching me live, maybe even joining me for some of the interviews. So that's the February code is SPATS, S-P-A-T-S, because that's the workshop I'm going to be at this summer. So you heard on how to contact Alicia. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/ATVantage wants to check out the show notes and things like that. My website, obviously, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. We're almost every single Wednesday we're live. We're going to have to skip some because in March coming up is the 200th episode where we're going to have the plan is to have a 4-hour blab talking with lots of different people, giving away hopefully lots of good stuff during that 200 celebration, because 200 is a lot of episodes. That's a lot of podcasts. Yeah. And after this summer, it'll probably be a whole lot greater if I go to 2 or 3 workshops and record the interviews there. So I'm super thankful for all the people that allow me to do that. Bob Marley over at Memorial Hermann and Israel Montano is the one that said, "Hey, Jeremy, come down to the SPAT." So a big shout out to them and Jeff Darr, those people that got me approved to come down there. So it's pretty cool, the doors that are open up. And, you know, so now whenever people come to meetings and stuff, you know, they're like, "Oh, hey, I listen to the podcast," or "Hey, I know you," and that kind of thing. So it's really cool, something that you don't even think about as being part of this. So I'm really thankful for that. Alicia, any final thoughts?
No, I mean, I just want to say thank you for having me and allowing me to kind of take the stigma away from contract work. I hope that the people who have listened hopefully have a little bit different idea about what opportunities are available and maybe not looking at it through just one lens. So thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. And all of my live listeners, thank you very much for being part of it. Again, if you have any questions, I know some of you are still typing away, but we're going to go ahead and say goodbye.